You are listening to the Senior Pastor Podcast, where four giants of the restoration movement walk us through the issues facing the church today. Your four hosts are Bob Russell, Don Wilson, Ken Eidelman, and Scott Rawlings. Before we begin, a word from our sponsor.
With more than 7,000 investors, the Solomon Foundation is committed to helping the local church grow. When you partner with the Solomon Foundation, you get an excellent return while making an eternal impact. Start today at www.thesolomonfoundation.org.
Welcome to the Senior Pastor Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Rawlings, the teaching pastor at Christ Community Church in Portsmouth, Ohio. And for this segment of the Senior Pastor Podcast, I'm joined by Ken Eidelman, former president of Ozark Christian College and lead pastor of Crossroads Christian Church, Bob Russell, the founding pastor of Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and Scott Rawlings, the founding pastor of Christ Community Church in Portsmouth, Ohio. Well, gentlemen, as we record this, we're going into the holiday season, and a lot of churches and pastors are preparing for Christmas services, Christmas Eve services. And I know that the struggle that a lot of young pastors face is, what do I do? Am I innovative? Am I traditional? And then what do you preach, especially considering the fact that you've got a lot of people at a Christmas service as well as an Easter service that aren't always there? And where do you go with that sermon, and how do you handle the holiday? So, Bob, you mentor a lot of young pastors. So if you had a pastor come to you, they're going to do their first Christmas Eve service, mm-hmm. their first sermon. How would you guide them?
I was shocked early in ministry at how popular Christmas Eve services became. When I first was at Southeast Christian, we didn't have Christmas Eve services, but I had a few people say, you know, we need to have Christmas Eve service. Other churches are doing it. So I threw together a very simple Christmas Eve service and wasn't very well prepared. And I was stunned at the number of people who showed up on Christmas Eve. Over the years, that service has gained momentum, and it's incredible the people who show up on Christmas Eve. So it is a terrific opportunity for the church to be evangelistic and to get people inside their doors and accustomed to coming. I think we need to keep it simple, 50, 55 minutes, and the people come for the experience of being together on Christmas Eve and hearing the Christmas story. We hear that story so much that we try some different angle to be fresh, and that really isn't needed. A preacher friend of mine said he almost hates the Christmas season because there's so little scripture actually to deal with, and we feel like we're saying the same thing every year. He said, well, this year I'm going to look at Christmas from the perspective of the donkey. What was that donkey thinking about? Mary and Joseph came into the stable because he's looking for something unusual to say. But I think we need to remember that the best thing we can do is just retell that story, read that story over again. And there's power in the word of God. And man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. And I found that if we keep it simple, keep it quiet, keep it reverent, maybe get some little kids up, have a special or two, and just keep it to 50 minutes. It doesn't have to be complicated. And people go home very moved, being reminded of the birth of Christ.
And what about you? What say you, sir?
Yeah, I think Bob's right about the Christmas Eve services. They're very popular. And of course, we're in a context here where we have multiple services. I think that, you know, and some people are cynical about the crowds at Christmas and Easter. I tend to think it is a great opportunity to engage with seekers, with unbelievers. And I think the church is edified too when they are in the assembly and they know that half of the crowd may be seekers and lost people, and they overhear the gospel of the incarnation shared with those people. There's something about that. As a longtime Christian, since I'm, you know, a follower of Jesus since I was 10, when I look out and see crowds of people and I hear what they're hearing and I'm listening with their ears, it is moving to me. It's edifying to me to just know that people are hearing the gospel and the message of the incarnation. I think, too, that a lot of times on the Christmas Eve service, there's a communion service that accompanies that. I find that communion is really special at certain times. I think at Christmas time, I think in a Good Friday service or an Easter service, that the Lord's Supper just has special significance. So I think a candlelight communion service on a Christmas Eve can be very meaningful and impress the ultimate result of the incarnation. Jesus said that he came to die and to give his life as a ransom for many. And so the reason why Jesus came, it can be really emphasized in the context of a communion service. I think with preaching, one thing that would freshen up preaching and at the Christmas season is to go back to the Old Testament passages that prophesy about the first coming of Jesus. And of course, you can deal with the prophetic passages to deal with the second coming of Jesus. The incarnation lends itself to preaching from both the Old Testament and from the prophetic passages in the New Testament. There's auxiliary material to work with besides just what we see in the Gospels themselves.
Yeah, and as somebody who put together the sermon series for this Christmas and leading up to that Christmas service, we are looking at the prophet. So obviously, I'm going to agree with you, Ken, since that's what I did. Dad, what say you? What do you look for at Christmas time, especially given that you've got the Christmas and Easter crowd?
Christmas for us, because of just unusual circumstances, has always been as much about the music as it is the sermon. The sermons are usually fairly brief because you try to get people in and out within an hour because they're really pressed for time and that time of year. And this little old burg of ours has produced some of the best singers. Kathy Battle grew up here.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Kathleen Battle is one of the leading opera singers in the world. Yeah, and she's from Portsmouth, Ohio.
We've always had really good music. A lot of those people are dead and gone, and that made the preaching really easy. And the other thing, though, that I found, because I've got a hang up on congregational singing, is that people know the Christmas songs and can sing them and want to. And so I encourage that. I'm not a big fan of turning the church service into a rock concert with a sermon at the end of it. I really like for people to participate as much as possible, but I get called an old codger about that, Ken, since that's just not the case. I'm as frisky as I can be, you know.
Don't you think, Scott, that people are a little afraid of having a quiet, reverent service because they're so used to energy and so committed to creating energy that a change of pace on Christmas Eve is really healthy and welcomed by people?
I think so. I think that's one of the reasons they show up. The atmosphere is not charged. It's warm and wonderful. And I think we want to keep it that way. I agree with that completely.
We've all encountered situations in our church where someone could really benefit from support and talking with a therapist. Thankfully, God has provided individuals who are specifically trained to be therapists, and I am genuinely excited to share a fantastic option with you today from BetterHelp, the sponsor of today's episode. BetterHelp's mission is to make therapy more affordable and accessible, which is so crucial because finding a therapist can be quite challenging, especially when you're limited to local options. But with BetterHelp, everything becomes easier because it's an online platform. By answering a few questions, they can match you with a professional therapist in just a few days. Signing up and getting matched with a therapist is a breeze. Simply follow the link in the description, betterhelp.com/1801media. That's betterhelp.com/1801media. Not only does clicking this link support our channel, but it also gets you a 10% discount on your first month of BetterHelp. It's a win-win. You know, finding the right therapist is kind of like dating. Sometimes it takes a bit to find the perfect fit. But with BetterHelp, if you don't quite click with your initial therapist, no worries. You can easily switch to a different one for free without worrying about insurance or network restrictions. As Christians, we sometimes don't think of therapy as an option, but it's essential to recognize that there are people available to help us through difficult times. So I want to encourage you to consider this valuable option. Whether you need someone to talk to about everyday struggles, depression, anxiety, or any other challenges, if you or someone you know is struggling, I strongly recommend exploring online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the description or visit betterhelp.com/1801media. That's betterhelp.com/1801media to get started. Once again, thank you to BetterHelp for supporting this channel. Let's all take a step towards better mental health and support one another on this journey. You're not alone, and there is help available. BetterHelp.
I think we made a mistake several times. The worship team is so enamored with the upbeat choruses and praise songs that they want to give exposure to people to that on Christmas Eve. And they come in and do some of the same songs they do on the weekend. And I think it needs to be a more subdued, quiet service. People appreciate reverence. But also we have to keep in mind, a lot of people have their kids in there. Mm-hmm. And they're struggling to keep their kids quiet. And that's why it, Ken mentioned, you mentioned the sermon needs to be fairly brief that night too.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's effective that way because they remember it a lot better. But we had a guy here, he's dead now, named Ralph Harrison, who had a tremendous capacity. We had a choir and all that other good stuff, but he could turn the congregation into a choir. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. And that's a magnificent quality. And I had that call to my attention here at a funeral just recently. The folks had picked a couple of songs out, very traditional. One of them was Amazing Grace, and they were just being played on with the overhead, da 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 da. And somebody somewhere, and this was in the chapel, not in the auditorium, and chapel seats, I don't know, 120 or 150, something like that. Anyway, somebody in the back there started singing softly along with it, and then others joined in with him. And for the first time in years, I had a goosebump or two, because goosebumps don't come easily at my age anymore. And I thought, we better learn something here, I think. And it was quiet, like you were saying, and soft and touching. And for a Christmas service to do that, people leave with what everybody wants that we don't give into very easily. And it's warm and fuzzy. Even the children can get caught up in it if you use some traditional songs.
You know, Bob, to your point about it being a more quiet and reverential service, I really agree. I think some of the most memorable Christmas Eve services that I remember, one person with an acoustic guitar on a stool up front. I think people come on Christmas Eve ready to worship at that level. They're not looking for a rally kind of service. They're looking for something that's more contemplative, something that is more subdued and reverent. And so we think in terms of the special events being ramped up, and maybe what we need to do is instead capitalize on that expectation people have to worship in a more quiet, contemplative way.
For some reason, we've had several disasters on Christmas Eve, and we laugh about it now. But one year, we had a grade school choir that got up, and they were all wrapped up in warm Christmas clothes and stood around a lamp, and they were supposed to sing four or five songs. And for some reason, they had a young boy who had just developed a monotone, and he was standing right by the microphone, and they were awful. I mean, they were awful. And I'm sweating it out the first song. Then I realized they're scheduled to sing, I don't know, four or five songs. This is going to go on forever. What are we going to do? It was just awful. People were giggling. And the second song, one of the older girls, larger girls, standing on the back row of the risers became overheated and she fainted. And she took a 1.5 gainer down through the Red Sea part, and she smacked her face on the concrete floor and knocked out a couple of teeth. So we had the Lord, I think the Lord interrupted the song. It was so bad, but it was disaster. Then we had to try to fill in because they were supposed to sing more. And so sometimes your plans go astray. And that's one of the more memorable services. Oh, yeah. Then the first service we had in our new building, our present building at Southeast, was a Christmas Eve service. And I got up to preach, and place was packed, and television cameras were there because of their first service. National news was there. 5 minutes into my sermon, a gay rights heckler stood up in the balcony and shouted at me. He said, "That's absurd. Jesus was humble and compassionate, not like you." And we found out our acoustics in the building were really good. He could be heard all over. He moved down to the front. And it's Christmas Eve, and he starts shouting at people, "Wake up, people, this man is duping you. You're spending all this money for a building. You ought to give it to the poor." And I looked, and our security people were circling him. It was a good thing, because my redneck friends were circling him too. And they carted him out. So it wasn't exactly a quiet, reverent service. Sometimes the best laid plans of men go astray. But I do think you're better off just if you can manage to keep it quiet and subdued.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's really important is to have a lot of people stationed in a lot of different places to shake hands and hug people and blah, 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 to recognize the folks who are there for the first time that they may know, and really make them welcome, because there's a goodly number through the years that show up for the first time at one of those services that over a period of years become really tied into the church. And it's just that appeal, for some reason or other, has somewhat of a lasting. I know we talk about CE stuff, but it has real value.
I think there are more visitors who come on Christmas Eve than come on Easter. Easter, for the most part, is usually big, not because of visitors, but because everybody who's a member of the church or associated with the church comes on that day. But I think there are more visitors on Christmas Eve because people are looking for something spiritual to do on Christmas Eve. And they know that there's more to it than just exchanging gifts and party, and they're more receptive to coming on Christmas Eve, and we ought to take advantage of that.
We've always had a Christmas Eve candlelight service, and the catastrophe that we had the first time, for whatever reason, the room was absolutely filled with smoke and was to be followed by a young lady to sing a difficult song. She hacked and coughed all the way through it. So I that can be a...
That was it for the smoke machine.
That was it for the smoke machine.
Yeah, as a lawyer, I'm always waiting for that candlelight service for somebody to stick one of those candles close to somebody who used too much Aquanet and see what happens there. But so, Lord willing, that hasn't happened yet. But you do get, obviously, all those people in on Christmas Eve. Do you, and Bob, you said tell the story. What do you do, if anything, evangelistically with that story? Do you do anything? Are you a fan of just telling the Christmas story in and of itself?
For me, I look at that as a time to plant seed. We normally didn't have invitation on Christmas Eve, but I think you're planting seed, trusting the Holy Spirit to make it grow and bring it to fruition. I think you can say in your sermon, if you never accepted Christ, if you'll go to this side room, or if you'll come see me afterward, we'll guide you as you make that decision.
I guess I'm coming off of the services last night at Southeast. It's not Christmas, obviously, but there was a video testimony that was just put you on the floor. I think sometimes the use of a video testimony, if it can be worked into a message, so the people who come as visitors, as seekers, can kind of track someone else's conversion experience, I think it can be especially convicting. The use of video, if it's done well, it is a powerful enhancement to the application part of preaching.
Also, Ken, for some reason, we have a number of baptisms on Christmas Eve. I think if baptisms are done with dignity and a little bit of explanation, can be a very positive drama for the visitor, because that's an attention getter. If they're not accustomed to seeing people baptized, and they see common people in that baptistry and just the gospel given in 30-second testimony there by whoever's performing the baptism, that can be really powerful too.
Well, gentlemen, I think those are all valid points, and I hope that young pastors listening to this, and I know there are many, will take a number of pointers from that as they go into the Christmas service. I know that my first Christmas Eve service was nerve-wracking, and so I really want to highlight those points again. That, Bob, I think you're right. I don't think we need to be innovative, and I think we show some reverence, and it doesn't have to be, you know, just a bunch of noise. And I also agree, Ken, I think you're right. That's a great way to kind of fit the gospel and telling the Christmas story, is possibly having a video testimony or something like that. So all great advice. Thank you, gentlemen. And thank you for listening to the Senior Pastor Podcast, and hope you tune in next time.
This has been the Senior Pastor Podcast, a production of 1801 Media Incorporated. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode.